Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Amidst all the other things we do when we gather together, this is the hour of prayer, communion with the Lord all together, and it is sweet. We've been talking the last 2 weeks, particularly about spiritual formation, about putting the faith into practice. We're continuing that today. This is one of those sections where the chapter break is probably unfortunate, makes us think four and five are more separated than what they actually are. Paul has been giving instructions to Timothy on training for godliness. Today he moves into sort of a new section, but more it's just a continuation of what he has been saying. Today he's going to move into one of, you're talking about Timothy putting the faith into practice, today he's going to move into one of the hardest areas to put your faith into practice. You know what it is? Your family. How you treat, how you act, how you live with the members of your own family. Today we're going to see one of the truest gauges of your Christian faith is how you act with the members of your own household. The first paragraph I'm going to go through pretty quick, and we're going to plan to come back to in more detail next week. There's more that could be said on treating everyone around us with purity, so we're going to come back to that next week. But the reason why I'm going to go into the bulk of the first half of chapter 5 is because I want us to see the very close connection that Paul makes between what we're going to talk about today and what we've been talking about the last 2 weeks. All right, so we're going to come back to the first two verses next week. I will also admit to you that in my mental outlining of the book, as I've thought about the book of 1 Timothy, you've got the behavior of the church when we all come together in chapter 2. You've got elders and deacons in chapter 3. You've got Paul's instructions to Timothy in chapter 4. You get to chapter 5 and it's care for widows. And I will admit to you that as I've worked through those sections in my mind, just sort of playing with them and thinking about them in addition to what's going to come later on in 6. But when I think about these big sections, I'll admit to you that what we're going to do today in 5 has seemed disconnected to me at first. And it shouldn't be that way. That's my weakness. That's my lack of integration. I'm not saying it's unimportant. It's been a curiosity. Why does he move from these three things, elders, deacons, instructions to Timothy, and then all this detailed instruction about a church's benevolence ministry? It has just seemed sort of out of place. It didn't seem to connect. Why does he go from this to there? And that connection is so much of what I hope we get to see today. We're going to be talking about the faith of those who care, the faith of the ones who do the caring. We're going to talk about the faith of the ones who are cared for. Paul speaks to both parties, the faith of those who do the caring, those who are cared for. And then third, why this faith and care are so related. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Verses 1 to 16, keeping faith in the family. This is one of those longer passages I was talking about last week. Do you have the stomach for it? You have ears for it? This is going to get really detailed in some parts. You are going to wonder why as I read. Let's get this word into us that it may direct us, have its effect on us. 1 Timothy 5. Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father, your own father. Encourage him as you would a father. Encourage younger men as if they were brothers. Encourage older women as mothers and younger women as sisters in all purity. Come back to that more next week. Verse 3. Honor widows who are truly widows. Not meaning find out whether they faked their husband's death or not. Are they real? But meaning, are they dead? That was supposed to be a joke, but I guess, yeah, it is. He doesn't mean find out if they're really a widow legally. Find out if they're really destitute. If they really have need. You see, the word here for honor means both respect and financial provision. Think of our word honorarium, a payment that is made in honor and recognition of a service rendered. Take care of, honor those who are truly destitute. But, he says, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents or forebears, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day, but she who is self-indulgent is dead while she lives. Command these things as well. Just like chapter 4, verse 11, instructions to Timothy, command this. Get to chapter 5, command this as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Let a widow be enrolled or put on the list. If she is not less than 60 years of age, she's at least 60, an element of seniority, we'll come back to this. If she has been a one-man woman, fidelity, and if she's had a reputation for good works, if she's godly, if she has brought up children, not strictly necessarily her own biologically, but if she has been a nurturing person, a maternal character, if she has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work, but refuse to enroll younger widows. For when their passions draw them away from Christ, seemingly not personally away from Christ, but this pledge that they have made to Him, when their passions draw them away, they desire to marry and so incur condemnation for having abandoned what they did formerly, their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house. And not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not, or the things that must not be. So, Paul says, I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. For some have already strayed after Satan. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened for them. Let the church not be burdened so that the church may care for those who are truly widows. This is God's word. People get bent out of shape over 1 Timothy chapter 2. I'm not sure they know chapter 5 is in here. This is way worse. What should a young woman do? Paul says, get married, have kids, be domestic, look after your home. We'll get back to that. People get worked over chapter 2. I'm not sure they know this is in here. I call today keep the faith in the family. We can use that phrase, keep it in the family, in a couple different ways. We can use it when we talk about passing down something in the family line, something like property or estate or a business. There's something appropriate about that in relation to the faith. Keep it in the family, pass it down, certainly. There's probably a negative sense as well. We can talk about keep it in the family like a secret. Don't let it get out. Keep it in. I don't mean that today. I don't mean keep the faith in the family like that. Don't let it get out. I'm not talking that way at all. What I mean most of all, though, is maintain your faith in the family. Keep it in how you act with your household. Demonstrate it in your own closest relationships, even in your home life. keep the faith. And then in the family relationships of the church as well, one of the truest gauges of what you actually believe is how you act with your own family, especially those in your family who have need. One of the truest gauges. And by extension, to see the church as one big family. So, first, let's look at the church's care for widows. And as we start off, I've got to say, this is not abstract. This is not theory. This is not something academic. This is a painful theme, isn't it? We have widows in this room. I have spoken at the services for some of your husbands. As a pastor, I have cared for these widows, wept with these widows. This is not a subject. These are people. I care for you today. I don't mean to make it hard for you coming to church and having all of this stuff from the past shoved in your face. I care for you. The God of the Bible does too. In fact, that's very much our starting point. See, in the ancient world, a woman was often defined first in terms of her relationship to her father and then to her husband. And once those two men died in her life, very often the woman was looked at as having no value by the secular world. And the God of the Bible is very different. See, the whole way through the Old Testament, Yahweh, the God of Israel, is described as father to the fatherless, defender of the weak. Defender of the poor, the widows, the orphans. He's a friend of the friendless, the stranger, the foreigner. That's who God is. And so His people in the Old Testament are constantly commanded to do the same things, care for orphans and widows, strangers, foreigners. His people are constantly called to do the same. They get to be vehicles of His care to those around them. They get to demonstrate this is what God is like through, see that through what we do. His people are called to do it. And so the prophets utterly denounce the leaders and the members of the people who don't. This is what God is like. This is what we're supposed to do. So the prophets denounce the ones who do not. You get to the New Testament and all that continues. Gets ramped up, if anything. Jesus Christ. Jesus tells His disciples, watch out for the scribes who devour widows' homes while making a show of religious activity. Condemns it. James chapter 1. You get to the end of James 1, what does he say? Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And, I mean, he goes on to say, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. So let's not forget that part too in this age of being woke in terms of social activism. Let's remember it's also about keeping ourselves separate from immorality and all kinds of impurity. But you want to know what's going to please God? Look after widows. 1 John chapter 3, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother or sister in need and takes no pity on him, does nothing to care for them, how can the love of the Father be in that one? Because that's what the love of the Father does. Cares for the needy. And 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 4, if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them learn. A learning is a change in behavior that is consistent over time. Not just knowing stuff, it's doing stuff. Let them learn to put their faith into practice. Let them learn to show godliness to their own household, to make return to their forebears, the one who raised them and cared for them. For that is pleasing in the sight of God. It's just like chapter 2 when he says, let prayers be made for all men, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives. That's pleasing to God. You get to chapter 5, care for those in your family who have needs. That's also pleasing in the sight of God. So all of this training we've been talking about, all of this spiritual formation, we got to see it's not just knowing things, it's not just information, it's not even just being able to speak it back. It's what do you do with your family members? It's how do you care for those around you? It's this right here. broadly, how we care for our family in general, specifically those who are elderly in our families, in our midst, who have needs, specifically widows. Since becoming a pastor, I've become aware of more people than I ever expected to, in their 50s and 60s, who have made life-altering decisions to care for elderly parents. And it's beautiful. It's godly. It's a godly act of service. People, I'm talking people who have made career sacrifices, home and vacation sacrifices, something, care for aging parents, something that was not even on my radar in my mid-20s, to my own shame. At times, I know that these caregivers have felt bad for not being more involved in the life of the church, for missing out on so many activities and events of the church. And certainly, there's an element of missing the support and fellowship of being in groups of the church. So let's do all we can to care for and help and support those who are in that phase of life. But to whatever extent the caregivers feel bad, what I always try to communicate as much as I have opportunity is, you're not missing out on the ministry of the church. This is the ministry of the church. This is what you are doing. This is Christian service. N.T. Wright tells a story of a friend. When he was a young student, he had this friend, this associate, who could not believe it was the real Paul who wrote 1 Timothy. Because his associate said, Paul, we know, was always concerned about things like justification by faith, the death and resurrection of Jesus, and things like that, theology. And so all of this concern about care for the needy, for those who have special concerns, it just seems so trivial by comparison. And N.T. Wright says he did not have a good answer for his friend at that time, but he does now. He says, to whatever extent we think about God and theology and church and the world, to whatever extent we think that those things are separate from care from those around us, there is something tremendously wrong with how we think about God and Jesus and the church and the world. Paul says what he says, he does what he does about care for those around us because of what he believes, what he knows about Jesus and his church and the world around us. So verse 7, command these two. Continuation of chapter 4, verse 11, as I mentioned. Chapter 4, we have put our hope in the living God, the Savior of all men. Command that. Let them learn to put their faith into practice by caring for the elderly and their family. Command that too. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith. Denied it. Worse than an unbeliever. Put these things into practice. Religion God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this. If you want something, you won't just want it in order to have it. You'll do something in order to have it. Not earning, but following. Implementing. What do? You care. You provide for those around you, those especially in your family. Now, I do not want to make today entirely about whether it's okay to use nursing homes or not. But it's such a common issue, I feel something needs to be said. All right. Paul says, take care of those in this phase of life. Is using a nursing home a viable option for Christians? After watching my own family wrestle with such matters, with my grandparents, a few of my grandparents, and already, my parents have begun to say to me and Danielle, sorry in advance for what we're going to put you through someday. We've watched our family wrestle with this, struggle with it. Here's one question that I find to be a helpful starting point. It's not going to solve everything, but a starting point. Is a nursing home a means of your care for your loved one? Or a substitute for your care for your loved one, a replacement And what I mean by that is, people are living longer now with more and different health needs than they ever thought possible back then. When Paul talks about a woman in the complete elderly phases of life, he mentions somebody who was in her 60s, right? Back then. It's totally different today. I know that there are people, I would suspect there are people in this room who have elderly parents in nursing homes, and you're racked with guilt about it. And today is not about piling on guilt about that. Is it a means of your care such that you're recognizing some of the tremendous challenges that are now enabled today? Does using a nursing home allow you to stay involved in their life as a son or daughter, but you're still going around them, you're in their life, you're honoring them, you're continuing to be with them, or are you just punting off their care to somebody else? Just handing it off. That's not going to solve everything, but I think that's a helpful aspect for us as we go through this. How are we treating our own family? One of the most beautiful acts of faith that could ever be offered. The more we sacrifice to care for those around us. I'll also say, in preaching this, I completely blew it with my own family last night. Last Sunday night. Last Sunday night. I will confess to you this morning, this is not just I'm imperfect in general too. I struggle too. No, last Sunday night, very specific instance. In the span of a few minutes, both boys did a minor infraction, not that big of a deal, and I completely blew it. Lost my temper on them. Just preached that morning. I don't want to tell you this, but I just preached that morning. Watch your doctrine and your life closely. That night, minor infractions, I'm yelling at my boys. This is tough, isn't it? Here's an illustration from this time of year. This time we start to turn the heat on in our homes. You can wake up in the morning and you've got your heat set, and so that you walk out and the whole house is more or less the temperature that you set it to. You think you've got it all raised where it needs to be, and then you open a cupboard door. You ever have this happen? You open a cupboard door and what happens? You find this pocket of cold air. It was sort of sealed off from the heat seeping into the rest of the house. So often God uses your relationships, our relationships with the people closest to us, as like opening those cupboard doors to reveal, to show where the warmth of His gospel has yet to permeate us through and through. And I know some of your relatives, it's not like opening cupboard doors, it's like going out in the cellar. I know. It's like going up in the attic, out on the deck. If we were in springtime, I'd talk about spring cleaning. You think you get the whole house clean, then you pull out the fridge. It's like, whoa. I had occasion to be behind the fridge yesterday. I won't tell the whole story. We had to find some puzzle pieces, but I was behind the fridge. It's nasty back there. You think you get the whole house clean. You think, I believe this. I confess this faith. This is what I hold to. And then here comes your family member. Our relationships with those people in our lives closest to us, those are not incidental. They're not side things like, well, if I could just get past that, then I could really show how holy I am. Then I could really show how devoted to God I am. No, that's where it gets revealed, how much the gospel has yet to seep through the entirety of this person, of this heart, purifying us. You believe this? You got to put it into practice. The faith of those who care for their family members. And I'm learning that just as much as anybody. Seconds. I think what Paul does next is amazing. There are three blocks here. Verses 3 through 8, he talks about just those who receive aid from the church. And the qualification there seems to be just simply need. Destitution. If somebody has need, the church needs to care for. It seems to be that simple, that first block. But then you get into verses 9 to 15, and there's another dynamic that happens. You see, he uses two different verbs to introduce these sections. Verse 3, honor women. Verse 9, enroll other certain women. Honor, enroll. We don't have as many details about this list as we would like, so I'm not going to be able to answer every question by a long shot. It seems to be that beyond just receiving occasional aid from the church, that there was this group of women, of widows, who made a pledge of commitment to the church. It seems like it required singleness or involved singleness because of what he goes on to say in the passage, but that they would be set apart for a special ministry of the church, probably visitation, prayer, compassion, and that they would be regularly supported by the church. And Paul says, before you're going to let somebody, let a widow be put on that list, check out her qualifications. This is quite a list. Verses 9 and 10. Just like he gives qualifications for elders in chapter 3, here he gives a list of qualifications for widows who are going to be enrolled. Not just receive aid, but enrolled on this list. Let her be enrolled if she is of a certain age, seniority, if she has been the wife of one husband, again, like the elders, that's out of time, a one-man woman. It's the exact converse of what he said about elders earlier. He's not saying remarriage is less godly. He's going to just advise people to get remarried in a minute. He's not saying remarriage is a problem, but faithfulness, fidelity, one spouse at a time. Does she have seniority? Has she had fidelity? And is she godly? A reputation for good works, demonstrated character. If such a woman meets those, then enroll her on this list, involve her in the ministry of the church. Do you see what he's saying? The faith matters not just for those who give care, the faith matters for those who receive care. Christian benevolence is never to demean the recipient, but to exalt them, to honor them, to call forth godly service from them. The reason why we care for you this much is because we see the image of God in you. And knowing we recognize the image of God in you lets you know you still have so much to contribute to us in this new phase of life. Somebody has said that the woman's utter dependence on the Lord, calling out to Him night and day, was probably special preparation for intercessory prayer. This closeness to the Lord. She receives from the church and she contributes to the church. The faith of those who receive the provision. Second block. Aid in general. This list of elderly women. Second. And then third, notice what happens if a woman is too young or is younger than that. What happens then? And as I said, these may be some of the most controversial words in the book for our culture in relation to gender. This is a part we would not get into if we were not doing expository preaching, I assure you. When was the last time you heard a sermon on this part of 1 Timothy 5? Right? You don't just pick this out for kicks. At one point, especially early on in the process, I wondered why God put this in here. Not care for widows in general, but all this particular detail. In the middle of the process, I was still wondering. The process of preparation, I kid you not, when I got to this point of the sermon, at my desk down the hallway, I got up, walked down to get a drink, and on my way sort of unconsciously said, "Thanks a lot, Paul." I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. Why does he say that? But look at what he's saying. Think of the longings the younger widows would have been more likely to have. Not saying never for older widows. I seem to be being given a particular ministry in second weddings for older widows, and it's awesome. Not saying it never happens for older widows, but particularly for younger widows. It would seem that denied, as I mentioned, can't mean separated from Christ personally, from saving faith, but from work that he might have for them to do, or that they have pledged themselves to do. It can't be that he's saying this desire would pull you away from Christ himself, because otherwise he wouldn't advise them to just do it, right? And he says, go ahead and get married. It can't be lesser. But what he does find fault with is divided affection. What he wants to help these younger widows avoid is a scenario where they've made a pledge to the church and then later they want to go back on it. He says, don't do that. Let's avoid the scenario where we make vows and then break them or want to. So widow, younger, but look at the advice. Marry and have kids and be domestic. Doesn't he know how people feel about that? Doesn't he know you can't say that? Doesn't he know a woman can do more than run a house? Just this morning, literally, I saw an article about a reasonably well-known actress making sort of this manifesto of singleness, not needing to be defined by any relationship to anybody around her. I make a habit of trying to check CNN before I come in to preach on Sunday morning. I just want to know what if there's something major that happened while I slept overnight. So I did that this morning, CNN article, well-known actress, I'm fine single. I don't need these other things. That's outdated, antiquated. Doesn't he know women can do more than run a house? Here's the thought. Can women do more than have kids, raise kids, run a home for kids? Can she do more than those? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know, believe me, whether one has children or not is not always a simple up to the woman, up to the couple. There's brokenness in the world. We're not introducing a requirement for true spirituality. Paul, we're talking in generalities. In general, can women do more than these things? Sure. So why does he say this? Let me give you two illustrations. I'm going to give you one each for men and for women. I got to give one for women because if I just gave an illustration to men, it would seem odd because this passage is most directly to women. But I got to give one to men as well because otherwise ladies are just going to check out while I go. All right, so one each for men and women. Here's the one for the ladies. Can a woman do more? Here's the illustration. Can you use a Gucci purse to bring home fresh produce from the store? Did I get that? I mean, Danielle's out of town this weekend. Is Gucci the right thing? Really expensive purse. You with me? Can you use a Gucci purse to bring home onions and peppers? Can you? Absolutely. If you do, it's not that you've recognized some greater new capacity inherent in the purse. If you do, what does it mean? You just haven't recognized the value of the purse. You're just using it for that. That's for the ladies. Here's the one for the men. Could Michael Jordan play golf? Could he play baseball? Could Michael Jordan play? Did he have the right to play golf, play baseball? Absolutely. But if you know anything about basketball, you never get worked up about his golf game. You know what I mean? Does a woman have the right, the ability to do things like have a career, work outside the homes, be in politics, whatever? Sure. But to whatever extent we emphasize those things, instead of nurturing children, giving life to children, managing a home for children, to whatever extent we emphasize these other things, it's not that we've unlocked some new ability or that they didn't recognize in the past. It's that we have lost sight of the inestimable value of giving life, of raising, training young ones. Paul does not say get married and have kids as a concession or as a trap of his own culture. He's not saying it's lesser. He's saying do that because this too is putting the faith into practice. How you care for your family, There's nothing higher. There's no more direct path to holiness. Don't think you have to make a vow of celibacy and serve the church. That may come later. Right now, if God gives you opportunity, have kids. Raise kids. Because the truest gauge of your faith is how you interact with your own family. If you are a widow, if you're younger, see the invaluableness of being a wife, a mom, a homemaker. Should God allow you that privilege? Keeping faith is not just for those giving, it's also essential for those receiving. Third, why? Why is the faith and this care so related? Why would this be? Why would Paul say not just, you really should care for your parents? I mean, after all, think of what they did for you. You really should. Why does he not just say that, but why does he say, if you don't, you've actually denied the faith? Why, when he says in verse 16, women, people should care for those who have needs in their own family so that the church should not be burdened with them, notice that's not a full stop. Notice he doesn't say, so the church should not be burdened, period. He says, you take care of them so the church can take care of those who don't have anybody to take care of them. Caring for the needy, like raising children, family comes first. The church is a stopgap measure. Like raising children, just on the side. But why does he say, you got to care for those in your family, and if you don't, the church has to do it? Why? Whatever individuals can't do, the church picks up. Why must this be? Think about it. What is the faith? What is the faith? A widow is one, chapter 5, verse 5. A widow is one, he says, who is a true widow. She has been left alone and forsaken. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Deuteronomy 31. It's quoted again in Joshua as the basis for that famous, be strong and courageous, have I not commanded you? I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to forsake you, no matter what everyone else around you does. You may be mano, all alone, humanly speaking. Yahweh says, I will never do that to you. I will never let you alone. I will never forsake you. Moses, Joshua, it gets quoted again in Hebrews 13 for New Testament believers. He is the father of the fatherless, the defender of the weak, the defender of the poor, the needy, the widow. That's who God is. Yahweh, Jesus Christ comes, and what does he say? I'm him in the flesh. Emmanuel, that got God with us. Yeshua, Yahweh saves. Father, Son, I know, so there's that distinction, but Trinity, he's God in the flesh. And the whole way through, what does Jesus do? He constantly notices the marginalized and the poor, especially women. Luke chapter 7, she who has been forgiven much loves much. He forgave her much, noticed her, cared for her, loved her, Luke 7. John chapter 12, Mary, what she has done is so fragrant, it will be told wherever this gospel goes in all the earth. He constantly cared for the poor, those who had needs, especially women. He noticed the woman who in a great act of faith gave her last mite and commended her. He raised the only son of the widow of Nain who had died so she might be provided for, caring for the widow. And at the cross, what does he do? At the cross, Jesus Christ looks down at Mary, likely a widow. Joseph seems to have disappeared from all the accounts. Looks down at his own mother, likely a widow, says, dear woman, behold your son. And looks at a leader in the young church and says, care for her. Care for her. at the cross, he's caring for widows. What's the cross? The whole act of the cross is the God who said, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. You are helpless. Spiritually, we were destitute. Spiritually, we were spouseless. We could do nothing to provide for ourselves. And the cross is Jesus saying, I will provide for you. I will give everything I have to see that you are cared for. I will sacrifice not just my convenience, not just my lifestyle, but my life to see you are cared for. The cross is Jesus Christ being left alone, being forsaken. My God, why have you forsaken me? The cross is Jesus being forsaken so you could know you believe in him. That'll never happen to you. The cross is him providing for you in everything you would possibly need and making all of us a family. Dear woman, your son. Dear son, your mother. Care for her. You cannot see that. We cannot experience that and behold that in faith and not be changed, not be affected in how we treat those around us and especially those closest to us. So whoever it is in your life, open that cupboard door and let the warmth of the gospel flood it. On Thursday of this week, Tammy said to me, I am amazed at how you timed this. Typically, I was clueless. I said, what do you mean? She said, I'm amazed how you timed this. Next week is the widow's offering. I didn't know. I mean, I know we do that, but I didn't know it was next week. I said, that wasn't me. We're going to go home today. We're going to decide. We're going to talk. We're going to come back next week. And we're going to put our faith into practice through our gifts dedicated to materially providing for those in our family who have needs. In addition to that offering, Casey has been working for some time on matching those who are destitute in our congregation with some of our small groups. Sort of this one-to-one pairing partnership where we get those in a small group to visit roughly once a month, have a meal with them, help them with practical needs around the house, take your kids along, let them see your kids. That's a life-giving thing. So to pair our small groups as vehicles of care for those in our congregation who have needs. If you're in a small group and you want to do that, contact me or Casey. We'll get you matched up. If you're not in a small group, join one. Then have them contact us. We'll get you matched up. You believe all these things. We have put our hope in the living God. Command this. Care for those around you. Command this too. One of the truest gauges of how much we actually believe what we say we believe is how we care for those in our family. Let's pray together. Father, thank you. What can we say? Praise you for who you are. You called yourself a husband to your people. As a bridegroom rejoices in his bride, so does our God rejoice in his church. Amazing. Thank you that you did not let us destitute, but gave everything to lift us up, to restore us, to make us your bride, And I pray, just as we said, experiencing that, help us put it into practice in every close relationship around us. As I've prayed already this morning, thank you for the great start this church already has in this regard. The love, the delight in caring for those in our midst. And I pray you would use this message to take us further and further in that area specifically. Bind us together. In Jesus' name.